Mitchell Bishop, you're about to open your one-man show here in Chicago. But for the benefit of my listeners who live in other cities that aren't quite the great theater towns like Chicago is, like I'm thinking of New York and London, can you tell me who the hell was Mike Royko?
I'll try.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. I'm Austin Titchener, co-artistic director of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, now in its 18th year, number 926, Royko, Chicago's Shakespeare. Mitchell Bishop is a writer and performer whose one-person stage play, Royko, The Toughest Man in Chicago, opens this week at the Chopin Theater and runs through September 29, 2024. Mike Royko was a Chicago journalist, and Mitchell's show is based on his more than 7,500 columns written over a 34-year career that also earned Royko the 1972 Pulitzer Prize for commentary. I sat down with Mitchell last week after one of his rehearsals, and he explained to me who Mike Royko was and how his new show came to be.
Mike Royko was a Chicago journalist, columnist, who wrote for the three major papers in Chicago, the Chicago Daily News, the Chicago Sun-Times, and the Chicago Tribune. He wrote for 34 years. He wrote five columns a week for 30 of those years, something like that, a crazy amount of time. He amassed 7,500 columns in his entire career. Now, you got to think, most journalists today, I think, write one column a week, maybe two columns a month, maybe. Not sure, you know. But so this guy was pumping them out every single day.
And, well, and for three newspapers. Only two of those newspapers exist now.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, so, you know, he started at in the Chicago Daily News. Chicago Daily News was an afternoon paper. They used to have afternoon papers. They would have the paper in the morning and then a paper in the afternoon, totally different staffs, you know, because people would read the paper riding on the bus, riding on the train, going home. And then in the 70s, people stopped reading afternoon papers as much. You know, they'd go home, they'd watch the news. Sure. And they get their information different ways. You know, they drove home. Maybe they get the radio or whatever. So that went under. He went to the Sun-Times. It was owned by the same people. And then when that got bought by Rupert Murdoch, he went to the Chicago Tribune. So, yeah, he was prolific. And he wrote, you know, sort of from the common man, the everyday, the working man's perspective, from the guy who did the trash, did the tavern owner, the cab driver, and that was his perspective. So it was always kind of butting up against people of power, corporations, bureaucrats. These were kind of some of the people he didn't like so much because they were the ones who kind of were the offenders to, you know, the guy trying to make a buck, go home, go to the bar, you know, like have a nice life without making all the money in the world.
Yeah. Well, and I imagine he ran up against some, maybe some folks in the suburbs who had a little bit more money and read the Tribune over the Sun-Times or the Daily News, right? Because he had that regular Joe perspective.
Yeah, sure. And also a lot, he lost a lot of those people because he was in the 60s very much involved in civil rights. And so those people liked segregation. And he would make a big deal about calling out, saying, you know, you got problems in the South. It's just as bad in Chicago. You know, he would always say Martin Luther King didn't get hit with a brick while he was marching in Selma. He got hit in Chicago, you know.
Yeah.
And that upset a lot of people. And they lost people. They lost readership because of him, because of his views, and the Daily News backed him, the Sun-Times backed him, you know.
It's amazing, and he kept writing for, as you say, 34 years.
Yeah, well, he was great. And, I mean, if you read or you see the show and you read some of his columns, you'll know why they kept him on staff, because it's really brilliant the way he was able to turn a phrase, the way he was able to, you know, understand the perspective and maybe give a satirical version of what your you know, if we're going to do this, then let's go the logical end of it. And he was really good at that, you know.
Well, and articulate the perspectives and the and drive the conversations that needed to be had. And maybe people didn't want to have those conversations, but they realized the value once the conversations got started.
Yeah, and then the next day he'd write about, pizza, you know what I mean? Yeah. Or the Cubs, you know? So he was all over the map. It was really hard to nail him down. Mm-hmm. And so I think sometimes people, when they didn't agree with him, they appreciated his perspective and they continued reading.
Right.
And then sometimes, God forbid, he might have changed a couple people's minds, you know?
Yeah.
Because he was putting things in such a way that we're like, oh, wow, you know, we really are acting in a poor manner.
Mm.
You know, I wouldn't have realized that before, but reading this guy, I wasn't around at the time,
right.
So I don't really know, but he had a great readership. You know, he was on page 3 of every single newspaper he ever worked for. So
it is amazing. I mean, even those of us who are latecomers to Chicago know the name Mike Royko. What brought you to Royko the writer, but also Royko the character that you wanted to embody on stage?
Well, I grew up in Barrington. I didn't really read Mike Royko when I was growing up. I kids don't really read newspapers. Nowadays, they don't at all. But back then, even then, it wasn't like a thing. So I found him. You know, I'm a theater artist. I write solo plays. And I was researching a play, something that I wanted to write, and I just thought, I'm in L.A., and we hang out with a lot of Chicago people, and I remember thinking about, you know, Royko and Studs Terkel and stuff like that, and thinking, well, I don't know, I know all these other people, Bill Veeck, you know, but I don't know who Mike Royko is. I've heard the name 100 times. So let's just check it out, you know, and then that was during the pandemic, so I really went down the rabbit hole of reading about him, about all his stuff. I realized there isn't really a lot on this guy.
Yeah.
You know, there isn't a lot of, there's a couple books on him. You know, he did very few interviews. He called a Cubs game once when Harry was sick and it wasn't great, you know. But he loved the Cubs.
Sure.
He came up with Royko Rib Fest. I do remember that as like a kid.
Wow.
He was, you know, when you really dig deep into him, he was really an essential part of this city and really cared a lot about this city. Didn't really want to ever go to Washington or New York. And he had offers to go work for papers in Washington. And he turned them down, you know.
Right.
And he would have been great. He would have been very successful. But this was his home. This was where he wanted to write. These were the people he wanted to write about. And he knew them, you know.
Right.
And they knew him. So there was a connection. Later in his life, he had to write at least 2 or 3 columns that were national so that they could be syndicated in other papers. And that was really, from what I've read and what I've talked to people, that was really hard for him because he didn't want to cover national stuff. He wanted to cover local stuff. You know, why aren't the, why does this neighborhood have tops to their trash and these don't, you know, stupid things maybe. To us, we wouldn't think about it.
Right.
And you'd find a lot of columns where he would call someone and interview somebody, and throughout his entire career, people would say things like, no one's ever asked me about that, you know?
Yeah.
So, like, he called, there's this one column about, I'll give 2 examples. One column is more serious, and it's about when the movie Bonnie and Clyde came out.
Mm-hmm.
And his whole take was like, why would I watch a Hollywood version with Warren Beatty and Faye Dunaway, who are very handsome, they're fun, they're charismatic, shooting people? So he called the survivors' families of the people that Bonnie and Clyde shot, and they told their stories.
Wow.
And one of the guys says, no one's ever called us to ask us about this.
Wow.
And, you know, the end is basically, I'm not going to see a movie until you make it about the people who it affected.
Yeah.
Another time was a guy in a Los Angeles Bears football game, ran out onto the middle of the field, and he got lit up by Dicka. Stepped out of the huddle and smacked the guy and knocked him down so the police could arrest him.
Wow.
And Royko called him up and said, well, why'd you do it? And the guy says, you're the first person to ask me.
Hi, I'm Scott Simon of NPR News. You're listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Fool.
Where can you RSC the RSC? This fall of 2024, we'll be performing our special election edition of The Complete History of America Abridged in Illinois, Maryland, Virginia, Kentucky, North Carolina, Tennessee, and Colorado. And we'll be performing the ultimate Christmas show abridged for three nights in December at the South Padre Island Convention Center in Texas. And next March of 2025, we'll be returning to the Merrimack Repertory Theater in Lowell, Massachusetts for the three-week Lort Theater premiere of the comedy of Hamlet, a prequel. Check out the touring page at our website, ReducedShakespeare.com, or our social media pages for venue and ticket information. Now back to my conversation with Mitchell Bishop, whose one-person show, Royko, the Toughest Man in Chicago, opens this week at the Chopin Theater and runs through September 29th, 2024.
That must be fascinating for you to play this guy who's not that long gone. I mean, he has relatives and people still around who knew him. Have you been able to talk to those people about who Mike was, or is it strictly through his writing?
Oh, no, I've talked to everybody I can, you know, who's still available. And even I've been here for a month now in Chicago while I've been rehearsing and sort of getting acclimated. And even, you know, last week I was texting with some of the people who used to work with, saying, asking just little details, you know, just to see what certain things you want to get right. Yeah. You know, I talked to his wife, Judy. I've talked to his son. I've talked to his leg creatures, which is what he called his assistants, so like people who you know, it's been.
I love that term. I need to get myself some leg creatures. Note to self: get some leg creatures.
So I've talked to people and friends, you know, friends that he had, and a lot. Of, I mean, he's been gone 27 years, so it is a long time, right. and he would have been very old at this point. You know, he would have been something like 92 years old, okay. or 91 at this point. So. You know, there are a lot of people who are gone, you know. I don't know if you could make a documentary about them and get people interviewed because there's just not a ton of people still around, you know.
I bet his widow is thrilled that, and his relatives are thrilled that you're taking on this project and sort of bringing him to life. Did you have to get permission to incorporate his writing into your show?
I didn't. I don't know if I'm supposed to, but, you know, I mean, what are they going to do? Tell me. I'd say, here, I'll cease and desist on September 30th. How does that sound? Yeah. I didn't think about it. I think that they, you know, especially Judy, his wife, wanted to know what was going on, mm-hmm. and she really wanted to feel like I was, you know, representing him in a good way,
sure.
You know. So she definitely gave her opinion, but she's been on board. You know, she didn't know me from Adam when I showed up into town. And quite frankly, I didn't realize how much of an attraction this would have to people. Mm. I really thought that people would... I don't know that people would care as
right.
much as they do.
Okay.
And they really do. You know, and then when you're dealing with people who have family still around and all that, they really care. They really want to know what's going on. So, you know, I let her read the script. I didn't feel like there was any harm. This wasn't a hit piece. There wasn't anything in the script that I felt was really even controversial in any way. Uh-huh. It was really to focus on, you know, the best of what Mike did, yeah. you know, his writing, which uh-huh. was the main thing. Give a little bit of story so people aren't like, Jesus Christ, is this guy going to keep talking like this?
Right. Is this a Wikipedia on stage?
Yeah. Or as Steve Scott, if he was here, he'd say, when I presented it to him, it was like a term paper.
Right.
You know what I mean? It was like, and then this, and then this, and then this. You know, part of the reason, he was a fun character. He was an interesting guy. He spoke truth to power. And his writing for like just a guy, a flat above the tavern guy who grew up, you know, bartending at 13 mm-hmm. in Chicago, in, you know, the heart of the Polish area of Chicago, he writes like Shakespeare. You know, he's like a Chicago Shakespeare. So he's that's the stuff I wanted to focus on. And part of it too is that people will watch the play and then hopefully maybe go home and read some things that weren't in the play, you know, and get involved in that way, because he's a figure in Chicago history that really shouldn't be forgotten. You know, if you loved him, you like him, you hate him, he's an important Chicago person, I think, just as much as a guy like Bill Veeck, who is still pretty much remembered, or Harry Carey, or Studs Terkel for sure, you know. His writing almost transcends the paper in a lot of ways. Yeah. And I think that that's an important thing, you know, for this city. And for me to be, you know, I was around when he was still alive, but I really didn't know anything about him. And my whole life, I don't think my parents really knew about him. So it's fun to educate people on this stuff and get them involved, you know. Hopefully they will be inspired to go and read more about him and read his stuff. I think that's the best part about it.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, except for one more thing, which I'll share with you in about 60 seconds, so stick around. Mitchell Bishop's one-person show, Royko, The Toughest Man in Chicago, opens this week at the Chopin Theater and runs through September 29th, 2024. Go to ChopinTheater.com for more information. Then send us your Pulitzer Prize via email to feedback@ReducedShakespeare.com or throw a comment to us over on the socials or on our own actual website, ReducedShakespeare.com, or visit my website, TheShakespeareans.com. Thanks, as always, to Chicago's Johnson Matthew Croak, web services by Ginger Power Limited, music by John Weber and GarageBand. A random fan shout-out this week goes to Austin Petrie. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to National Public Radio Scott Simon, another son of Chicago whose novel of politics, Windy City, is a very funny Valentine to Chicago's political machinations. And as always, thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 926 27 78ths of the Reduced Shakespeare Company. You fascinated me with that framing, because of course you would, of Royko is the Chicago Shakespeare. That's very interesting to me, because it suggests to me that, as you say, he spoke truth to power, which is, of course, the fool's job. But he's witty and literate. He's a wise fool who speaks to both highborn and low. So I love that framing of Chicago Shakespeare, and will you change the title of the show to that?
No. I will not. It's not going to happen. Stop emailing me about it.
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to ReduceShakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.
So much less.